United Nations Radio presents Forum 59, a preview of some of the issues before the forthcoming 14th session of the United Nations General Assembly. John McVeigh is the narrator.
Afghanistan, abstain, Albania, no, Argentina, yes, Australia, yes.
A scene which will unfold many times during the next 3 months. The role of nations is being called. The General Assembly of the United Nations is in session. Delegates from 82 member states have come together to find agreed solutions to the problems they share.
United Kingdom? Yes. United States? Yes. Uruguay? Abstain. Venezuela? Abstain. Yemen? Abstain. Yugoslavia? Yes.
Indeed, the problems are many and varied. Today, 14 years after it was set up, the United Nations carries its voice into every corner of the world. The decisions and recommendations of the General Assembly reach into every walk of life. They affect every one of us. Listen to just one voice out of many.
The variety of activities encompassed within the United Nations is without parallel in the modern world.
The Prime Minister and Minister of External Affairs of New Zealand, Mr. Walter Nash.
It alone provides a forum for the discussion and resolution of political problems. It assists the study of economic and social difficulties affecting particular areas of the world. It provides aid in almost every field of human endeavor. It offers the means of realizing the ideals proclaimed by Abraham Lincoln of the equality, the worth, and the essential dignity of all men.
This huge variety of United Nations activities is reflected also in the preliminary agenda of the forthcoming 14th session of the General Assembly. Some of the problems we find there are as old as mankind itself. They are the perennial headaches of our world. Other questions, again, stem from man's most recent technological advances. It is with one such modern problem that we start our review.
October the 4th, 1957.
The first man-made satellite orbits the Earth. The space age begins. And the response of the United Nations to that challenge?
Agenda item 25. The peaceful uses of outer space.
At the initiative of both the Soviet Union and the United States, this question came up for the first time at last year's General Assembly. In the Assembly Hall, there was agreement on many points.
We must make every effort to dedicate outer space exclusively to constructive pursuits.
Outer space should be recognized as a field of international concern before it's too late.
We hope that this undertaking can be kept apart from the disarmament problem and free from the international differences which beset that problem.
Хотя делегация Советского Союза по-прежнему считает,
although the delegation of the Soviet Union still considers that the General Assembly should fully examine and solve the problem of the banning of the use of outer space for military purposes, the Soviet Union is prepared to discuss and come to agreement at least upon the narrower question of international cooperation in the use of outer space for peaceful purposes.
And there also was agreement on a first practical step, the setting up of a special committee to lay the groundwork for future international cooperation in this new dimension of man's existence. But the two major outer space powers, the United States and the Soviet Union, disagreed on the membership of the proposed committee. Mr. Henry Cabot Lodge, the representative of the United States, blamed the Soviet Union for preventing an agreement.
The Soviet representative argued that the committee must meet the Soviet principle that there should be equality of representation between what he called the two sides. This two sides idea is a concept which the United States cannot accept. There are no two sides to outer space.
On the other hand, Mr. Valerian Zorin, Deputy Foreign Minister of the Soviet Union, had this to say about the 18 countries proposed by the United States as members of the new Outer Space Committee.
Вы включили в ваш список 18 стран
In your 18-country list, you have included 12, no less, which are members of military blocs and which are linked with you in such blocs. You have included 3 countries of the socialist camp and 3 neutral countries. Is this in keeping with the principles of the United Nations?
The General Assembly upheld the view of the United States. By a vote of 53 in favor, 9 against, with 19 abstentions, an 18-nation preparatory committee on outer space was established. When the committee met for the first time in May of this year, 5 of its members, including the Soviet Union, refused to attend. Still, the other delegates held a number of sessions and unanimously adopted a report to the General Assembly. What are its highlights?
The committee suggests the creation of the United Nations Center, where current information on outer space activities would be gathered. It also recommends the establishment of a permanent committee of the General Assembly to deal with cosmic space issues. At the same time, it is thought premature to set up an autonomous international organization to foster outer space activities. The committee also advises against any attempt at present to draw up a comprehensive legal code for outer space. But it does list a number of juridical problems which should be considered and principles which might be endorsed.
It is up to the forthcoming General Assembly to act on these recommendations. We turn to the next issue. The question of disarmament. Last year, the General Assembly established a disarmament commission made up of all 82 United Nations members. But this commission has not met, pending the outcome of the Geneva Conference on the stopping of nuclear weapons tests. Still, the question of disarmament will be very much in the minds of the delegates to the forthcoming session of the General Assembly. On this subject, Mr. Dag Hammarskjöld, the Secretary General of the United Nations, stated at a recent press conference,
"The matter must come up at the General Assembly. This is one of those questions which the General Assembly should always persist."
Within the framework of disarmament, we now turn to another item.
Agenda item 59. The prevention of the wider dissemination of nuclear weapons.
Proposed by Ireland for inclusion in the Assembly's agenda. This item goes back to a suggestion made last September by Mr. Frank Aiken, Ireland's foreign minister. Speaking in the General Assembly hall, Mr. Aiken stated,
"It is in the interest of the existing members of the so-called nuclear club, the United States, USSR, Great Britain, and France, as well as in all our interests, that it should be restricted to its present membership. We would urge, as a first step, that there should be an international agreement to that effect, and that no state outside the club should manufacture or purchase or be supplied with or be in possession of nuclear weapons."
And now we turn to a question that has been before the Assembly for the last 4 years.
Agenda item 61. The question of Algeria.
Proposed for renewed Assembly discussion by 25 countries from Africa and Asia. These countries take the view that the situation in Algeria constitutes a threat to international peace and security. They say that France should negotiate with the Algerians, and they urge the General Assembly to recognize the right of the Algerians to independence. Listen to Mr. Monji Slim, the representative of Tunisia, speaking at last year's Assembly.
Notre organisation a le devoir de conseiller la négociation.
It is the duty of the United Nations to advise negotiation as the most peaceful method of putting an end to a bloody conflict. It is this organization's duty to point out what are the foundations of a solution in harmony with the natural right of peoples to freedom and independence.
France, on the other hand, insists that Algeria is a matter which comes under French national sovereignty and which the United Nations cannot take up. Here is the voice of Monsieur Maurice Couve de Mirville, the foreign minister of France.
La délégation française tient à déclarer très fermement.
The French delegation declares very firmly once more that the General Assembly of the United Nations is not qualified to deal with the Algerian problem. Therefore, this year, as in previous years, the Assembly would exceed its rights by inscribing that question on its agenda.
Last year, a proposal that would have recognized the right of the Algerian people to independence and urged negotiations failed by one vote to attain the required 2/3 margin in the General Assembly. Next, a more recent question, less than 3 years old.
The question of Hungary.
Last year, the Assembly reaffirmed its earlier condemnations of the governments of the Soviet Union and of Hungary for actions taken against the Hungarian people following the uprising of October and November 1956. The Assembly appointed Sir Leslie Munro of New Zealand as its special representative on the question of Hungary. In July of this year, Sir Leslie made known that he had not succeeded in establishing contact with the two governments directly concerned in the matter, namely, the governments of Hungary and of the USSR. Sir Leslie.
I was informed that the Soviet Union continues to hold that the decisions of the General Assembly on the Hungarian question are illegal. Similarly, the permanent representative of Hungary reiterated the position that discussion of the Hungarian question is an attempt to intervene in the domestic affairs of Hungary.
A full statement by Sir Leslie Munro on his activities will be submitted to the delegates of the forthcoming Assembly session. If past assemblies can serve as a guide, the decision on whether or not to discuss our next question will be taken during the first 2 weeks of the forthcoming 14th session of the General Assembly.
Agenda Item 60, the question of the representation of China in the United Nations.
China is at present represented in the United Nations by the nationalist government of Chiang Kai-shek, with its capital at Taipei, Formosa. The mainland of China is controlled by the communist government of Liu Shaoqi, with its capital at Peking. Each year since 1956, India has requested that the representation of China in the United Nations be discussed by the General Assembly. For some years before that, the same request was made by the Soviet Union. On every occasion, however, the Assembly has adopted a proposal put forward by the United States that the issue of Chinese representation in the United Nations be postponed for the current session. For one side of the question, listen to Mr. Krishna Menon, the Defense Minister of India.
If charter obligations are to be carried out, and this has been pointed out many times in disarmament debates and elsewhere, that any decision in regard to that vast land of 630 million people is to be implemented, it requires the consent, the cooperation, and the implementation by a government that can carry it out.
A case against discussing the representation of China in the United Nations is presented by Dr. Ting Fu Chang, the delegate of China.
The communists do not and cannot represent the Chinese people. They represent world communism and a tiny minority known as the Chinese Communist Party. The government which I have the honor to represent is, in the eyes of all the Chinese people, the only legally constituted and freely constituted government of China.
The latest Assembly vote on the proposal not to discuss the question of the representation of China in the United Nations was 44 in favor, 28 against, with 9 abstentions.
Agenda Item 62, the treatment of people of Indian origin in the Union of South Africa.
Proposed for Assembly consideration by India and Pakistan. Also a related item.
Agenda Item 63, the question of race conflict in South Africa resulting from the policies of apartheid of the government of the Union of South Africa.
Proposed by 13 United Nations member states from Africa, Asia, Europe, and Latin America. Both questions have been before the Assembly for a number of years. The majority of the delegates has persistently expressed the view that the apartheid or race segregation policies of the Union government are in contradiction to the United Nations Charter. Here is Mr. Arthur Lal, the representative of India, to the last session of the General Assembly.
Numerous past decisions of the Assembly and the fact that one member state, perhaps alone of all countries in the world, deliberately follows a policy of racial discrimination, makes it quite clear to us, and has made it clear time and again to a vast majority of the members of this organization, that the policies of that member state are in direct contradiction of articles of the Charter of the United Nations.
The Union of South Africa, on the other hand, has always claimed exclusive domestic jurisdiction and has challenged the right of the United Nations to intervene in these matters. Here is the voice of Mr. Eric Lowe, the Foreign Minister of the Union of South Africa, speaking in the General Assembly last September.
My delegation regards the inscription and any subsequent discussion of these two items as being ultra vires of the Charter. And for that reason, my delegation will not participate in any further proceedings during this assembly or any subsequent assembly concerning these two items.
From South Africa, we now turn to the Middle East. There, the United Nations is physically present in two distinct forms. It is responding to a double challenge. Let's go to the town of Gaza, in the Gaza Strip, at the southeast corner of the Mediterranean Sea, between Israel and the Egyptian province of the United Arab Republic. Why is this town so important? Our radio reporter in Gaza gives the answer.
In the first place, it is the headquarters for UNAF, the United Nations Emergency Force, which is stationed with the consent of the government of the United Arab Republic in the Gaza Strip and in the Sinai Desert. From its headquarters, the work of UNAF is directed. Cooperation is maintained between the various contingents of the peace force so that a watchful eye is kept on the armistice demarcation line between Israel and the Gaza Strip and on the international frontier between Israel and Egypt.
Agenda item 28, the United Nations Emergency Force.
The UN Emergency Force, or UNEV, in the Middle East, has been politically and technically a success. There is agreement on that among the delegates to the General Assembly. The point of controversy is that of financing the force. And what is the second reason for which the United Nations is so important to the Middle East? Again, here is our reporter in the town of Gaza.
Another reason Gaza is significant insofar as the United Nations is concerned is that about half its population is made up of refugees. The Palestine refugees are here in strength. Ever since 1948, when they were uprooted from their homes by conflict in Palestine, they've been living in various parts of the Middle East. In all, there are about 1 million of them, many in refugee camps, and all under the care of UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency. UNRWA must feed and house them and provide medical attention and vocational training, as well as education.
Agenda item 27. United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees in the Near East.
But what the General Assembly has in its hands is more than just a clear-cut humanitarian problem. The discussion about the future of the Palestine refugees often assumes strong political overtones. Should they be permitted to return to their former homes, now in Israel? The Arab states say yes. Mr. Ahmed Shukeri, the representative of Saudi Arabia.
The solution is there. It is repatriation and nothing but repatriation. It is the only solution that constitutes an investment of peace and an asset of confidence in this organization.
Or should the Palestine refugees remain where they are now and be integrated into the economies of their Arab host countries? It is Israel which suggests that course. Ambassador Abba Ibn.
The refugees are all Arabs, and the countries in which they find themselves are Arab countries. Under this slogan of repatriation, the Arab refugees would be uprooted from the soil of nations to which they are akin and loyal, and placed into a state to which they are alien and hostile.
As UNRWA is due to end its operations in June of next year, the debate in the forthcoming assembly will assume a note of particular urgency. The delegates will also have before them the views of the Secretary General of the United Nations. Mr. Hammarskjöld stated at a press conference earlier this year,
"It is my best thinking on the future of UNRWA, and I can tell you already here and now that, in my view, UNRWA is a must."
And in a report to the forthcoming General Assembly, Mr. Hammarskjöld strongly and unreservedly recommends that UNRWA be maintained for all the time and to all the extent necessary, pending an overall solution of the Palestine refugee problem.
Agenda item 30, economic development of underdeveloped countries.
No country can afford to have areas of poverty and depression within its own frontiers. The same is true of the international community. This idea is basic to the work of the United Nations in the economic and social field. Year after year, this idea is brought out in many ways and by many voices in the General Assembly. Year after year, the development of economically less advanced countries is a major preoccupation of the World Organization. Listen to but a few voices that were raised in the General Assembly Hall last year. Prince Ali Khan, the representative of Pakistan.
The underdeveloped countries have been faced with a combination of adverse circumstances, which has defeated all their efforts to improve their economies.
U Thant, the representative of Burma.
There are millions of people in the world who do not have enough to eat and enough to cover themselves with, and whose children cannot even go to the primary schools.
And John Foster Dulles, the late Secretary of State of the United States.
Economic development is, of course, an aspiration shared by all peoples. In the newly independent nations, and indeed in many which have long been independent, there is a burning desire for economic and social progress, for higher standards of living, for freedom from the slavery of poverty.
And what are some of the ways in which the United Nations responds to this challenge?
Agenda Item 31, Programs of Technical Assistance, Report of the Economic and Social Council.
For the last 10 years, United Nations technical assistance experts have benefited countries which have the will but often lack the skill to help themselves. Listen to Mr. David Owen, the executive chairman of the United Nations Technical Assistance Board, speaking earlier this year.
140 countries and territories have requested and received help in some form or another. The overwhelming majority of them, having an estimated per capita national income of less than $150 a year. Through the voluntary contributions which we have received from governments every year, we will have spent, by the end of 1959, over $235 million to meet thousands of requests.
But technical assistance alone is not enough, nor is the work of the great financial agencies of the United Nations. And so, the General Assembly last year set up a new international tool to bridge the gulf between plenty and poverty, between have and have not.
Agenda Item 29, the United Nations Special Fund.
The fund began its work on January 1, 1959. Its aims are twofold. First, to help the underdeveloped countries to obtain a complete picture of their actual physical resources. And second, to provide technical training. This basic idea of the special fund is spelled out by its managing director, the noted American industrialist, Mr. Paul G. Hoffman.
The reason these countries are underdeveloped is because there has been an underutilization of the physical and human resources.
Underdevelopment because of underutilization. This is where the special fund comes in. Its first 13 projects have already been approved and are being carried out. The forthcoming assembly will discuss the progress and the operations of the fund. Perhaps the most urgent question before the delegates will be that of money. Money will also be mentioned during the assembly's discussion of our next item.
Agenda Item 33, Report of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees.
It has been estimated that some 40 million men, women, and children have become refugees since the end of World War II. Many, perhaps 15 million, still are refugees. And of these, 2 million need some form of assistance from the United Nations. A large part of these unfortunate people are under the care of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. At last year's assembly, a new hope was born for many refugees. On December 5, 1958, the General Assembly adopted a resolution urging governments to promote a World Refugee Year. As of the end of July, 54 countries had announced their participation in this concerted international effort to at least partly alleviate the plight of the refugees. Each participating country is planning its own program to help the refugees, and many have already given definite pledges of money or a home, relief supplies, transportation, or other form of aid. Listen for a moment to Dr. August Lindt, the High Commissioner for Refugees.
We hope that governments will make additional contributions to the solution or the partial solution of given refugee problems, that fundraising drives will be organized in the public, and that especially immigration countries will open their door wider for the admission of refugees.
Agenda Item 13, Report of the Trusteeship Council.
The year 1960 will be an important year for the trust territories of the United Nations. Not less than four of them will achieve the ultimate goal of the trusteeship system, self-government, or independence. Let us take a look at our calendar.
November 1959, plebiscite in the northern part of the British Cameroons. Should the territory join Nigeria when that British colony becomes independent next year, or do the Cameroonians want to decide their future at a later date?
January the 1st, 1960.
Independence for the French Cameroons.
The first half of 1960.
Plebiscite in the southern part of the British Cameroons. The questions to be put to the people in that plebiscite will be decided by the forthcoming General Assembly.
April the 27th, 1960.
Independence for French Togoland.
December the 2nd, 1960.
Independence for Somaliland.
1961.
Independence for Western Samoa.
However, the General Assembly will not lose sight of some unresolved problems and of general matters pertaining to non-self-governing territories.
Agenda Item 40. Question of the frontier between the Trust Territory of Somaliland and Ethiopia. Agenda Item 36. Information from non-self-governing territories. Agenda Item 39. Offers by member states of study and training facilities for inhabitants of trust territories.
And also a problem that has been before the Assembly for a number of years.
Agenda Item 38. The question of Southwest Africa.
In all, the delegates from 82 nations will, during 3 months of the Assembly, be concerned with an agenda containing more than 60 items. We have reviewed only a few. Others of urgency and importance may be added between the time when this program was prepared for worldwide distribution and the opening date of the Assembly. Still other questions may come up during the forthcoming session. But whatever the number of items may be, and however you may personally grade them in importance and in degree of impact upon the state of the world, the fact that they will be discussed in open and searching debate is a reflection of a great new reality. It has been described variously as the realization of interdependence, as the emergence of a world conscience, as the sense of international solidarity.
The hopes for peace rest upon a further development of this sense of international solidarity and upon an understanding of how it may best be translated into practical terms applicable to the world in which we live.
This is how the Secretary General of the United Nations concluded a speech he gave recently at a public meeting in New York.
The international conscience is reflected in our actions over the whole range of international problems. But if we do not start with the simple questions of how to provide everybody with his daily bread, the rest of our efforts are likely to be of little avail.
You have been listening to Forum 59. A preview of some of the issues before the forthcoming 14th session of the United Nations General Assembly. Your narrator was John McVane. This program was written and produced by the international staff of United Nations Radio.